Hi, everybody, and welcome to, yes, still another edition of the No Filter Sports Podcast. Eli's off today. I'm Bob Page. With me is Larry Sorensen, a longtime University of Michigan standout, longtime Major League Baseball pitcher. And I introduce Larry first because it's a thrill for Larry not just to be here with me today, but with his boyhood hero, Dennis Dale McClain. Fellas, how you doing? If you didn't like what you saw this weekend, then you just don't like baseball.
Baseball or sports, period. It was a great sports weekend, especially if you're from the Detroit area or Michigan area. It was a great sports weekend. A lot of fun.
No, it wasn't. I graduated from Michigan. I graduated from Michigan State, and so did your son. Damn it. It wasn't a great sports.
And I cheer almost as hard for Michigan State as I do for Michigan. Almost. Paid more in tuition at Michigan State than I did at Michigan.
I guess we got to take this chronologically because we'd like to start with what happened Saturday night. Hey, Larry, let me ask you this question. How old were you when your dad took you to Tiger Stadium for the first time?
Eight. I was eight, and it was my grandpa.
Grandpa. What year was that? You're 61 now, right? Is that what it was?
65, actually.
Okay. Oh, 65.
So that would have been 70. It would have been 63.
Okay, so my first game was May of 1959, and Danny's dad took him to Wrigley to see the Cubs, obviously, before
that. Is that right?
So, fellas, I've been watching baseball, this means, for 61 years, and I'm thinking, and all I have to say is this. What happened Saturday night, we'll get to that in a minute, was the greatest single baseball game I have ever seen in my life. Are you with me on that?
The single greatest game you've ever seen?
I ever saw in my life. Are you with me on that or not?
Oh, I don't think I'm
okay. Then what's
overwhelmed
better?
With it? It was a great game. Listen, all five games have been great. I mean, there has been great suspense in every game. Everybody's doing what they're supposed to do, including timely errors, by the way, which always helps the game, especially if you're a fan, because you wait for the next guy to throw the ball away or miss it, go through his legs. God, you could sit here for an hour and talk about the blunders that have been made over the last 30, 40 years. But this was really something exceptional. I call it the Derek Jeter play without the ball. And, that's when Jeter, of course, ran the home plate, had the ball, and tagged the guy out at home. And this was very close to that. In fact, I just couldn't believe he never had the ball. He actually never had the ball. So it looked like – what did it look like?
Were you talking about the play at the plate? There was so much going on in that game. My God.
It really was a little league play. It really was a little league play with the amount of mistakes that were made on it. But it was interesting, and from an analyst point of view, you know, which is kind of how I look at things now, it was a fascinating play to break down when you take the segments of it that were right and that were wrong. I think it goes to a bigger point that we've talked about before, that we're losing the fundamentals in the game of baseball. Sure. You know, that's disappearing on us.
What do you mean? Okay, go ahead. Keep going.
It's all about the individual performances of home runs, 95 mile an hour fastballs, and the little things, you know, the base running mistakes, not earlier in the World Series, you know, breaking for home. On a contact play with nobody out, which is one of the number one things you teach a runner. Just all the little things seem to be falling by the wayside. There were a lot of fundamental mistakes on that last play for the game winner in game four, but certainly exciting times.
Did you buy what I said, Larry? Was that the greatest baseball game you've ever seen in your life? And if it wasn't, what was it? Come on, like this?
How about Gibby's walk-off offense?
It's not the same. They were like eight. What did they have? Eight consecutive half innings, an all-time record where at least one run was scored? Was it Brandon? Go ahead. What do you think?
Well, the one that comes to mind for me was actually recent, 2016, Game 7 World Series, Cubs, Indians. You have Rajay Davis hitting that grand slam, and then the Cubbies take it. That was a fascinating one, as well as when the Cardinals, is that 2011 game two? I mean, you had all those home runs.
There have been
a lot
of great games, and this game didn't win a World Series. Joe Carter did, Bill Mazeroski did, and this wasn't a perfect game as Don Larsen pitched in the 56 series.
I forgot about Joe Carter. That was That was
that's one of the greatest moments ever. But if you look at the seesaw nature of this game, again, the constant lead changes and at least one run in every half inning. And then the way the game ended, I'm standing on what I said, boys. I guess you don't agree with me. It's the greatest baseball game I've ever seen in my life.
No, to tell you the truth, I agree with you. It was fascinating from start to finish. As this whole series has been, it's been great.
Yeah, you know, I don't agree with you, but it may have been the greatest crazy play you've ever seen in your life. I think
way up there.
It's way up there.
I don't know I don't even know what number two would be, but this was just something that you would see maybe once in your life, and we saw it. We all saw it, and it just brings up the one thing that Larry said. Fundamentals in baseball are no longer as required or as important as they used to be. You used to have to hit a cutoff man. You used to have to run from first to third all the time. I mean, I still have the picture of in my head of what's his name? The kid that ran around third base and then fell and then tried to get up and got up again.
Randy Arozarena.
And I'm telling you, you talk about a guy that looked, he couldn't have, for about 2 minutes, he couldn't have found his ass with both hands. That's how confused he was.
Being a Giants fan, it reminded me, I know you've seen the replay of Daniel Jones wide open running for a touchdown the week before he falls on his ass.
How about his teammates on the sideline laughing?
What are you going to do?
Middle of a really close game, and the guy, you know, lets a touchdown get away from him, and his teammates are laughing on the sideline. Yeah. Just real quick, if I can, because there's been some guys, and I try to stay out of the dark side of the Twitter world, but there have been some players getting really beat up about that play Saturday night. And Jansen not backing up home plate. Everybody's killing him for that. And I said, you know, first of all, if he's back in the proper position, he has no chance to make any kind of a play on that ball whatsoever. It hit the umpire's shin guard and kicked to the right. So the ball is over to the first base dugout side. He's backing up towards the third base side if he's in the proper position. Where he was irrelevant to the play. That's number one. Smith's getting beat up for making the sweep tag. Okay, if you look at
Know where the guy was. He didn't know if he had the sweep or not.
Well,
but I mean, the runner from third, he was just covering his butt. Yeah,
but he's watching the ball come into him. The ball's offline, right? So he's three steps to his right of home plate, backing up the relay throw in case it gets by the first baseman. So he's in the right. Now he's got to scoot two or three steps to his left to get position to make the tag. He can't pick up the runner because he's got to be watching the ball. So he doesn't know the runner fell. And all he knows is it's going to be bang, bang at home. He goes for the sweep. To me, the guy that takes the heat in this whole play is Muncy. He made a terrible throw from 50 feet away.
Yeah, but he's still got to catch that ball, Larry. He's got to catch this. Muncy's got to catch that ball.
Ooh, the catch.
And they gave him an error the next day.
Yeah, which I thought was a little bit sketchy too, because I thought the throw was enough offline.
Yeah.
If he catches the ball and tries to go for the sweep and he doesn't get back, it's six of one, half dozen the other. But I think the throw was the real. If there's blame to be assigned, it's the throw.
Okay, I think we'll get into it as we go through this in reverse chronological. Okay, we'll get into it in reverse chronological order as we go through where we are in the World Series right now. And, you know, they keep saying how brutal the television ratings are. I'm so sorry to hear that, because this has been just amazing drama. It's been a great World Series so far. And I think all of you listening to this show, you guys probably all have been watching this. And so you know what I'm talking about. So we stand now, as we record this Monday morning, going into Tuesday night, with the Dodgers leading the series 3-2 after beating Tampa 4-2 on Sunday night. So in this game, the Dodgers go up early 3-0, and all they ever do, they can't even say Clayton Kershaw's name. Buck's got to say future Hall of Famer Clayton Kershaw, who's not been good in the postseason throughout his career, and he immediately gives two runs back. So it's 3-2. Smoltz and Buck before the game are saying, well, they're hoping for 21 batters that Kershaw can face, maybe 7 innings. And I'm sitting there thinking about going on the air with two former Major League right-handed pitchers on Monday, Denny McClain and Larry Sorensen, and thinking, guys, did you ever go into a game thinking to yourself, hope I can get through 7 innings. Hope I can face just 21 hitters.
No, it was a different time. I mean, we both,
it was.
Larry pitched at a different time. I pitched at a different time. I mean, we were required, and I mean required in the strongest term, to go 9 innings, at least go 7 or 8 all the time we went out there. And if you did not, do that, you were not going to be there number one very long. And if you had an ERA over 4, 4.5, you were on your way to Sheboygan. Sheboygan, I don't know if it's still in Wisconsin or Minnesota or California, but you were on your way to Sheboygan. And if not there, then he would send you to the Philippines where you would have a wonderful the rest of your life. But no, it was different times, different requirements. And I'm sure Larry has got the same.
Yeah, thing. Well, so Larry's next generation after you, Denny. Larry, right. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, that's interesting because, Denny, I'm sure that your guys thought the same thing about us that I just said about this generation.
Right.
That they don't know how to play the game, that they don't execute the fundamentals, that we were probably sissies because we had Suter and Eckersley and Fingers and those guys. We had relievers where you guys hadn't used that. And if you go back, I'll bet the guys, Denny, ahead of you said the same thing about you when you were playing, that the guys that left their gloves on the field between innings said, these youngsters don't play like we used to.
They did.
You know, so it that goes through the generation.
Okay, fundamental, stolen bases, and Brandon's always complaining that it's a lost art in baseball.
Love him.
We've seen Mookie Betts and company run wild on the bases. Now, first and third, Sunday night, fourth inning, two out. When was the last time you saw a straight Jackie Robinson-like steal of home? And, of course, Margot was out. It ended the inning. You can question how bright it was doing that. Guys, what did you think of that play? And I wonder if anybody ever tried a straight steal of home against either of you in a game.
Well, I had it happened to me a couple of times with Minnesota, the two guys, the second baseman and I think the third baseman. And I'll tell you, those guys could fly, absolutely fly. But
you mean Cesar Tovar was one of the
Cesar
guys?
Cesar Tovar was one of them, yeah. And then the other, the left-handed hitter.
Maybe Rich Rollins was the other guy.
Left-handed hitter. I'll remember here in a second. Right. The bottom line simply is they just don't play the game that way anymore. I mean, I didn't have more than maybe one or two people. Most of the time, and I think Larry will agree with this, most of the time they try to get you to make a balk. They will start running down the third baseline with you as you're going through into your windup. Because I used to pitch when I had a man on third, I would pitch in a full windup. I did not go to the stretch. So a hitter, actually a guy on the base runner at third, actually had a little bit of an advantage with me because he had an extra second or so to get down the third baseline. But seldom did it ever work. It was just kind of a waste. They did it more, as I said, for a balk.
Well, thanks for stealing my story, Denny, because that's what I was going to say. But it did work, and it was in Minnesota at the Old Met. You remember the Old Met, the dirtiest dirt in the league, right?
The dirtiest dirt in the league.
Took you about six showers afterwards before you got the dirt out of your ankles after you pitched up there.
It was something.
But Rod Carew was on third base. Gene
Carew,
Mock.
That's the other guy I was thinking about. Yeah.
Gene Mock was the
manager.
It's
easy to forget that name, Denny.
Gene Mock was the manager, and he did get me to balk, but the umpires were so surprised they missed it. And Mock went nuts. And that was the last time, in fact, that I pitched from the windup with a man on third base. I changed and went from the stretch with a guy on third base after that game in Minnesota.
Well, did you guys think this was a good play or not?
Hey, it was 2 inches away from making it, you know? So yeah, it was a good shot. I'll tell you, Kershaw stepping off, having the presence of mind to step back and then make his throw as he interrupted. That made the play.
Even though he almost threw it away, it was way up and outside.
Yeah, it wasn't a great throw, but that gave him the ability to make the throw.
Larry, I would have liked to have questioned every pitcher sitting in that ballpark when Kershaw stepped off the mound. I wonder how many guys actually know you got to come off the mound before you can do that.
Yeah. I'm willing to say I'd have probably done something stupid and not stepped off. I'd have gone ahead and threw. But it was great presence of mind to do that. And bang, bang, play like that. I mean, he was safe. He was out by 2 inches.
Yeah, and Larry and Denny, especially for a left-handed pitcher, because the guy's behind you. If you're a right-handed pitcher, you see him in front of you breaking for the plate.
Well, that's the only reason that the play just about works is because Kershaw's left-handed with the high stop over his head.
And my philosophy was I was not going to back off the mound. I was just going to knock the guy down who was hit batting. That's all. So I didn't have to worry about, you know, stepping off the mound and going through that whole process. All I did was throw at the guy, let freehand catch the ball and tag him coming down the line.
My philosophy was kind of like on a squeeze play, hit the batter, throw at him and hit him.
Yeah.
That stops it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So we got Kershaw on the mound, boys. The sixth inning starts. He throws one pitch, gets one out. He throws the second pitch, gets another out. What the hell is this? What is Dave Roberts doing coming out to the mound? And after 5 2/3 with two out and nobody on base, he takes Kershaw out. What has pitching come to in this World Series and in baseball today?
Well, as we were talking off the air before we came on the show today, and I was telling Larry that the thing that shocked me was all of the plaudits, all the excitement, all the hysteria about what a great game Kershaw pitched last night. He pitched 5 2/3.
Yeah.
That's what he did. 5 2/3. That isn't pitching. I mean, that's getting through the first 5 2/3. I mean, I just can't believe. I mean, the guys in the booth went nuts. Oh, what a game. They saved their year. They did this. They did that. It just didn't make any sense to me.
I kept thinking again about talking to the two of you the next day. Now, they show a shot of the dugout, and here is Roberts and Clayton Kershaw hugging each other in a big bear hug. And I'm thinking, as fiery as Denny McClain and Larry Sorensen were, I don't think you're hugging the bleeping manager in the dugout when you come out like that.
Well, I don't know. Not unless you want to be hugged.
A couple of things that they talked it over beforehand. Before he went out for the inning, they had a conversation about it, and they went through who was coming up and what was going to happen. The fact that it only took two pitches to get two outs was just a huge, huge plus. He was at 85 pitches for the day. The Dodgers are an
oh my god, if he hits 100, he can't go past 100.
Numbers driven team. The numbers show that after 75 pitches, Clayton Kershaw has up to 75 pitches. He's got about a 189 average. After that, after 75, it goes to about 308. And so the numbers dictated to them, they were going to let him go in that range. I thought he should have stayed in. I thought he should continue pitching. I thought he still had good stuff, but they maintained what they've done all year to get there, and they have the best record in baseball.
You know, the difference between this game and the other games he's been pitching there is simple. He got his breaking ball over a lot. And if he didn't get the breaking ball over, he'd have been gone earlier too. But he had good stuff the other night. He was consistent, and he threw lots of good strikes.
Let me ask you another question, Denny. How do you feel about when you get to the playoffs or the World Series, all of a sudden teams start changing their philosophy about what they're going to do, taking the starter and putting him in the bullpen between starts and rearranging their rotation and doing all those different things? You know, guys that had done the job for you all season long out of your bullpen, all of a sudden take the back seat to a starter or whatever the case may be, or changing your offensive philosophy or something like that.
You mean a player who
they're bringing a closer in the fifth inning sometimes.
No, that's, I understand
just,
that.
Yeah. They're just changing what they're doing.
Yeah. This time,
but I mean, changing the way
you got to do.
Yeah. But do you think it's always efficient to do that, to take a guy that's had 20 starts or 30 starts and say, okay, we're going to bring you in the middle of the inning of the sixth inning with two men on, instead of going through your routine to start the game? Because pitchers, as you, well, you maybe not, you weren't quite the guy of routine like some other people, but you know, most pitchers have a regular day-to-day routine of everything they do now. And all of a sudden you take them completely out of their routine. It makes for a different athlete. So anyway, just a thought.
Bob?
I want to tell you guys about my personal favorite moment of the World Series so far and of any World Series I've ever seen. But first, I want to tell you about Luke Nowacki. You need to let Luke of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies help you plan for future family obligations and your own retirement. His track record of success and decades of experience is going to enable Luke to create a custom solution for you or your business. So you want to call him. I give you the number all the time. Here it is again. Write it down this time, damn it. 248-663-4748. And you'll set up a complimentary consultation. Won't cost you anything. And then if you feel comfortable with the plan Luke lays out for your finances, go ahead. Let him do it. Ethical, knowledgeable, caring. That's Luke Nowacki at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And with rates at record lows, there isn't a better time than now to call David Hall Mortgage if you want to redo your mortgage. You've been waiting to do do this, now is the time. He's served the Detroit community for more than 30 years by consistently offering better options and more personal attention. And in the process, David Hall has built a resume of thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial proudly provides the fastest service in the business, generally 3 weeks or fewer. It's enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners just like you. So go to DavidHallMortgage.com to get started. Or how's this for an easy phone number to remember? Just call 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, and more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, guys, game four of the game of the World Series. It's 2-0 Dodgers. Here's the last spot in the commercial break we're coming out. Leading to the bottom of the fourth, there's a cute promo for Randy Arozarena with, have you seen this stuff? His rhinestone cowboy boots, his magic boots. So they're in the background. All the players are commenting about it. And he comes out of this thing. The first pitch is thrown to him. He's the leadoff hitter, and he hits it for a home run. Have you ever seen such a thing in your life? I mean, this is what drama. And what a player this kid is, though he failed in a big moment on Sunday night.
Well, Bob, some teams try to hit home runs. Some teams make outs. I mean, you know.
Danny, did you watch that?
If we knew what the result is, we wouldn't have to play the games, right?
And I also want to talk about, because
I don't remember any a hitter being as hot as he is right now.
I haven't either. Oh, man. I haven't either. He's out of control.
If I'm a pitcher, I'm standing next to him. I'm touching him. I'm saying, I want some of that heat, man. Let that rub off on me a little bit.
Yeah, and be careful.
I want to talk about the fundamentals thing with you guys, you old timers decrying the kids of today. Game three, Dodgers are up 3-0, and here's the catcher, Austin Barnes. Weren't you shocked to see a perfect bunt on a safety squeeze to score Cody Bellinger? I mean, the announcers had spoken earlier about what a good bunter earlier in the playoffs, about what a good bunter Barnes is, but nobody uses that play anymore either. How come?
You know, the game has turned away from bunts. Remember the old saying, singles hitters drive Chevrolets and Cadillacs belong in the hands of the home run hitters. I mean, that hasn't changed. Now everybody, for whatever reason, can hit home runs and can hit lots of them. That's what gets me. And I don't believe in the theory that the ball is tighter. I have no reason to believe that that's true. I've been told it's not true. But there's something going on other than the pitching is that bad. When I looked at what's his name last night, Glasnow, for about three innings, and I recorded the number of pitches that he hit near the glove. And out of the pitches, he only hit about 35% of the glove area. And I gave him a little bit of broadness too with it. So that's the problem. There's a lot of fastballs, and a fastball, a good one's impressive. But it's not so impressive if you can't throw it where you want to throw it. And that's the problem. These are major league hitters. They can hit good fastballs. They can hit good curveballs. They can hit good sliders. These aren't chumps just walking up there. They are in the major leagues for good reason.
I don't believe the pitching's that bad. And you're talking about you're not talking about the other side of this equation. Strikeouts are way, way up. They're bringing these monsters in out of the bullpen. They're 6'7", 6'8", 6'10". They're throwing 101, and they're striking guys out. Larry, I mean, did you notice a big difference in the pitching and now?
Well, it's the three true outcomes, you know, walk, strikeout, home run, and that's the way the game is played today. I think that the conditioning and what guys can do physically is the big difference. And Denny, you know, my era, 12-ounce curls were what you did to stay in shape in the off season and everything.
That's
more
than Denny's era did.
And now which isn't bad either for a right-hand pitcher, but now these guys are just stallions, all of them. And they're so into the conditioning and everything else. And they've perfected the movements and the motions so much that they've maximized the efficiency of what they can do. So the pitchers are throwing harder. What gets me is I think that they've taken away the part of the plate where you can keep a hitter honest. And so hitters have reduced the amount of plate coverage they have to have. And you see little guys taking the ball the opposite way for home runs. That never happened at all.
Never.
They never thought about trying to go the other way with power on you. And now everybody has got power from corner to corner. And I think that's one of the really big differences.
But isn't that a function of these kids throwing 100, 101? You just don't get around all these fastballs. And it's not like they're deliberately going the opposite way. They just do it.
No. Some of them try to go
partially
that way.
I mean, watch Miguel Cabrera take batting practice sometime. Yeah. It's a thing of beauty. He works on that right center field. Yeah. He works on that right center field slot because he knows when he's going good, that's where he's going to hit the ball. And if he pulls the ball for a home run, it's even more of an accident.
Speaking of great hitters, there's so many candidates for MVP of the World Series, depending obviously upon what happens to the rest. Right? Corey Seager, Mookie Betts. This Justin Turner, I remember him playing with the Mets. And the Mets did not offer him a contract after 3 years with the club. So I've been ripping Al Avila, a lot of us have here, for not offering James McCann a new contract. And he goes to the White Sox and becomes an all-star. But if you look at Turner, if you look at G-Man Choi, who bounced around, four teams in 4 years, this sometimes happens in baseball. And I don't know how they missed it on Turner, but boy, they did. Now, the pitching matchup, boys, on Tuesday night, you've got former Cy Young Award winner Blake Snell. And is this a mismatch or not? Going for Tampa against Tony Gonsolin? Gonsolin's got a big arm, but I don't like too much of what I've seen from him so far. I'm underwhelmed. What do you think?
I think we got an 8-7 game coming up Tuesday night. I don't think it's going to be a 1-0, 2-1 game. I think we're going to see a lot more excitement in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning because it just appears to me they've set this up for a big game. In other words, I think we're going to see some touchdowns scored in this next game. I really do.
Against Blake Snell?
Blake Snell's pretty good, and I think he's got a chance to have a very good game. Gonsolin had one very good appearance earlier on in the series. He pitched very well. I think if they get three innings out of him, they'll be ecstatic. I think
that's probably. Brandon, what do you got to say about that?
Bullpen day.
I think the Dodgers need to fight ace for ace. If they're bringing out Blake Snell, you need to bring out Walker Buehler. He's got enough rest after Monday's off day, and he needs to be the guy who closes this out for the Dodgers in Game 6. And maybe they want to save him for Game 7, but to me, I wouldn't risk it. I would put ace versus ace.
See, that goes back to the philosophy of how much do you change your thinking because it's the World Series or the playoffs. Do you use a guy on less rest than he normally has had for the entire season to get him out there? And I don't think he would have had a full 4 days. When did he pitch? When did Buehler pitch?
Game did he start Friday night?
Friday night?
Yeah, Friday night. Yeah,
Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
And they took him out after 6 innings, which drove me crazy.
So yeah. You're pitching him on 3 days rest instead of 4 days rest. And in this day, again, this day and age, that's a huge difference to these guys.
But Larry, that bothered me when he took him out Friday. Go ahead.
Yeah, but you know what else? I mean, he's throwing fewer pitches than he would have, you know, when you played and I played. So now you've got to discount that, obviously, because he's not throwing as many pitches. The strain isn't there. The soreness probably isn't there.
Except the way they measure it these days with the equipment that they've got, they're measuring high leverage innings because you put X amount more force into throwing a pitch with two men on base than you do with nobody on base. And they've got the numbers to show it.
We got so much more to cover here, but fellas, before we do,
yeah, they play football mention, too.
Yeah, well, we're not talking about your Wake Forest Demon Deacons, whoever they play. They got a win at least on Saturday. I saw.
No, anyway, they beat the number 19 team in the country. That's all.
I'll tell you something, pal. You know what? Before the Michigan State game, Michigan State disaster on Saturday, let's go back and just take a look at the previous season as I did with Michigan. And it's gotten to the point so bad that I had to be reminded that Michigan State played Wake Forest, for whom you do the games at Yankee Stadium in the bowl game. Larry, I'd totally forgotten about that.
Yeah.
There's just too many bowl games, too much mediocrity out there. Ridiculous.
Pinstripe Bowl in Yankee Stadium, and we broadcast that game from behind home plate. So we were in the, I guess it's the south or west or whatever end zone that it was. We were directly behind the goalpost calling that game. And, you know, anytime somebody got past the 40-yard line going the other way, you couldn't tell where the heck they were. Fortunately, it was radio, so we were just making it up.
You know, and you had a monitor.
Having a good time. Too.
So here's the other issue in baseball I want to broach. I understand that Rob Manfred, the commissioner, was on with Dan Patrick the other day. And what they were talking about is some of these changes we've seen in the postseason in this year, where you got all of a sudden four outfielders out there. and the shifts, and they're going back and forth all the time. And Manfred says one of the topics of conversation among the people on the Rules Committee when this year comes to an end is going to be limiting defensive shifts.
I'm thinking, for God's sake,
how come I can't put my fielders wherever I want them?
That's exactly right. That's the nature of the game. I mean, what do? Go back and start swearing at Lou Boudreau for putting in the Ted Williams shift? Is that what we do? I don't think so. But, you know, hey,
let's get it in the McLean family and put some blame there for a while.
Yeah, let's put some there too. Yeah. Bottom line simply is, listen, once you take that field, you do what you're supposed to do. If they want five guys in the outfield, let them have five guys. That's going to leave something
open. Okay,
what I don't understand is when they start this stuff and they've got four outfielders or they got three infielders on the wrong side of the infield, more or less, and somebody doesn't take a shot at the hole. They don't do it.
I don't get it either. You're right about that. I don't
want to hit home runs. Home run, home run, home run.
The rule is eight guys between the lines, you know, and where you want to put them. How are they going to regulate it? Are they going to draw a circle and say,
the umpire's going to say you can't have four outfielders.
As a second baseman, you're allowed to go 15 feet away from your position, but not 16 feet away from your position with circles on the field that every player has to stand inside and not before the play starts, has to be inside that circle. I don't see that happening.
Okay. As major league pitchers look back at your own careers, if one of your managers had ever put four outfielders, I know you're going to say it depends who the hitter was, but do you like this, four outfielders at the same time?
There were a couple years I kept trying to get him to put somebody in the bleachers. Stick him out there, and if he catches it, it's an out, right?
I tried to do that one weekend in New York, and lo and behold, they wanted to charge me for the tickets that I wanted to give to the outfielders.
Come on, guys. What do you think of it?
It's just another one of those things. You know, if these things start to roll around and you put enough conversation on the table, especially with this rules committee, who want you to start at second base in an extra inning game and possibly steal first base, and on the other hand, they want to grab different kinds of situations that make the game different. Does it make it better? I don't know. But if you're going to start limiting where you can put players, you've really changed the game of baseball. This isn't the game that we've all been playing for a long time.
But people would say they've changed it anyway. What with four outfielders and these shifts on every play?
You know, if you're smart enough to figure it out, more power to you. And I've said this a bunch of times. Whitey Herzog used to do it with magic markers and a sheet of paper. And he'd line guys up and know what pitches you threw, what the hitters did with them. I wouldn't have minded extra infielders, a fifth infielder at times,
right?
Because I knew there were guys could not get the ball into the outfield in the air off me unless I made a really bad mistake. And if I pitched the way I can and he swung the way he should, he was going to hit a ground ball and I didn't want it squibbing through.
Brandon?
I believe if you don't like the shift, if you don't like four outfielders, find a way to beat it.
Yeah.
I think it's good. Yeah.
I think so, too.
I hope they don't do anything.
And I don't have any idea how they could possibly say you're only allowed to move X distance away from your natural position.
Well, Rob Manfred says a lot of things.
I don't get that.
Hey, Larry, let me ask you another question. Are you wearing contacts today?
No, I'm trying to keep you guys a little fuzzy around.
Well, because I'm telling you, Denny, you remember when he came up, we got his baseball cards with those Coke bottle glasses. I got my ridiculous reading glasses on. And we know, all of us, you folks, you old people listening out there, you're over 45 and you're like me. You can't even see your phone in front of you without your reading glasses, as Sorensen just puts his on. That's why so many people 45 plus have been getting multifocal lens implants from Dr. Yaldo. They enable you to see the tiniest of print that also perfectly at a distance. Eli says it is life-changing. He's had it done. And of course, people like Brandon, under 45, are also opting for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo, the most precise in the world that enables them to throw away those annoying contacts and glasses, and in most cases, get better than 20/20 vision. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine, we're told. You get a free evaluation at Dr. Yaldo's. Doesn't cost you a thing. Find out which procedure can change your life in ways you can't even imagine. So you call 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you, and you get $1,500 off the regular price. And Star Lincoln is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership. It's a family business, started half half a century ago by Hoot McInerney, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist. The five-star reviews have poured in. His star makes buying or leasing a car during this pandemic efficient and easy. One woman wrote, "I just bought a Nautilus online from Star. Super easy, delivered to my home, and even sanitized it in my driveway." Everybody in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars, and in buying a Lincoln at Hoot McInerney Star, you're going to find both the buying and service elements to be a hassle-free effort. Drive the Star of American Auto Luxury. Make an appointment today at 248-354-4900 or buy online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Boy, am I bummed. Do you guys have any idea how hard I worked on my Lions Lament? Do you know how hard I worked on my Lions Lament for this morning, only to have it blown? How the FLs took the lead at Atlanta in the first quarter, then somehow let the Falcons drive. Brandon, how far did they let the Falcons drive? 98 yards to score in the second quarter. Atlanta's up 14-7. How such a great kicker, Matt Prater, missed that 46-yard field goal in the fourth quarter that would have given the FLs a 16-14 lead. Now, the FL's final drive. No timeouts. TJ, get out of bounds! Get out of bounds, TJ! But he didn't. And yet, instead of his usual snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, wow, the Lions win. And to set it all up, Denny, a bonehead play you'd think only the Detroit Lions would be worthy of. You want to talk about it, Denny, or should I tell him about it? How Todd Gurley had the ball and nothing but the end zone before him in the waning moments, but you can't score. Slide down to the turf short of the goal line. Keep the ball. Play is over. Falcons get two more snaps, two more knees. They run it out. Game over. But no. Gurley goes into the end zone. The Lions get the ball back after his TD. Stafford with a clutch pass first to Danny Amendola and then to Kenny Galladay down to the tweet. Replay check of the clock. You thought it would have run it out or a 10-second runoff afterwards, but no. Ball back in. Stafford spikes it. 2 seconds left, and then
Matthew Stafford. He has time. Hesitates. Throws. Touchdown, Lions! And TJ Hockenson.
How about that? And the FLs managed to win. Now, boys, cut to Bloomington, Indiana, Saturday afternoon. By Sunday morning, who hadn't seen this amazing highlight? Up 21-20. With less than 2 minutes left in the game, Penn State forced a turnover on downs deep in Indiana territory. Hoosiers down to one timeout. Nittany Lions could have used up the clock and ended the game. But the same thing. Devin Ford raced untouched toward the end zone, realized his mistake a split second too late. He falls in for a touchdown in a 28-20 lead, but that gives Indiana the ball back. They tie the game. And they, I know everybody's seen this, and they won it in overtime on that wild, wild dash and controversial two-point conversion. So the Atlanta Falcons coaching staff and every other coaching staff has now gone to school on this, just a refresher course, right? Wrong. And the Lions win. They are now 3-3, season saved.
Whoever thought we'd see 500 this year with the Lions?
Yeah, right? After it started the way they started. Yeah,
the way they started, and they didn't look like much of a football team, but they look like they're playing now. Good things are happening, and their schedule kind of favors them right now. Right. So, you know, some good things can happen. Who knows? You know, somebody said earlier that they may play get in a playoff game. Wouldn't that be something? That would be unbelievable.
They couldn't even make the win easy, though. They had to go ahead and get a penalty on the play to move the extra point back, so that it was a much tougher kick. and all of a sudden it was a nail biter.
It's like a 43-yard field goal.
Yeah. as far as Gurley goes, I mean, he had a brain fart somewhere between the five-yard line and the goal line. I mean, remember when he started to stop? He was trying to stop, and I'm thinking, what the hell is he doing? What is he doing? And boom, he finally fell over into the end zone. But
have you seen any of the quotes coming out of the Atlanta camp? It's he said he was, his momentum was too great. He just couldn't stop. Well, you knew you were going to stop. Start your momentum a little bit earlier.
There was a Lion trying to tackle him.
Yeah. And then the coaching staff said, he obviously was trying to stop way too late. But
see, Dan Quinn was a genius, wasn't he? Just 2 or 3 years ago. Look what's happened to Atlanta. Well, how the hell do you fall with Julio Jones and with Matty Ice? You're 1-6, And now the Lions have Indy coming in. They're 4-2 coming off a bye. And at least Kenny Golladay now may get his wish. A lot of Lions fans after Sunday campaigning for him to get his new contract he's been bitching about. But this does not mean that Kenny Golladay isn't a knucklehead. See that crude, thinly veiled message? Instagram got so much publicity the other day. He posted it after his big game last Sunday against Jacksonville. And I quote this, and I'm surprised the Free Press, Detroit Free Press, spelled this word out today. This bleep gon' cost you, G-O-N-E gon' cost you. Don't let that go over your all head, talking about how much money he deserves in a new contract. Wouldn't you be worried about winning? Instead, we're going to play this season. I don't want to think about my contract. We're going to talk about it when the year is over. We're about winning right now. Is he about winning?
Bobby, you're talking about is in the perfect world. People only think about winning. That's not the real world. The real world is how much money am I going to get before I play my next game? Listen, that's all he's looking out for himself. He's trying to make more money. He's certainly entitled to it.
He can play.
He can play, man. I'm telling you, he can play. And it's just going to be interesting to see if he stays healthy. How good he can be this year, because if they get on this little roll, you know, because we don't have a lot of tough stuff in front of us, this could be exciting. This really could. By the way, just to set the record straight, I even bet on the Lions yesterday.
You did?
Yeah, I sure did.
I didn't know you were interested in sports gambling.
No, I'm not.
Good bet.
So you regular listeners know that that Denny has told some great stories here about speaking of money and contracts about dealing with Jim Campbell over the years. So Larry, when you pitched for the Brewers and all your other clubs in baseball, how much talk was there among you guys in the locker room about your contracts? You remember teammates going public with this stuff during a year? And what was the attitude? What were the attitude of the other guys on the ball club if they did?
Not that much once the season started. And, you know, when I saw that Instagram message, the first thing I thought was Jerry Maguire.
Oh, that's right.
That was just Jerry Maguire all over the place. It's just different. I mean, I truly believe that when you're out there playing the game, they're not thinking if I catch four balls, I'm going to make an extra $250,000 a year. I don't think that enters into it. And I think that brings me back to a point about the World Series this year. I've been fascinated by the emotion of all the players because it's been such a goofy year and guys are saying, you know, with nobody in the stands, it's hard to get yourself up. The emotion in this World Series with guys standing on top of the railings, cheering for home runs, it's been a really emotional time for the players. And I think that's good for the game too. But when you're playing the game, it's just, I got to catch that ball. I've got to make a good pitch. You're not thinking about the money.
And I'll tell you something else I noticed with the players. The players appear to really be having a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
The laughing, the jumping up and down, the chest bumps, the arm, elbow bumps, and all the other stuff.
The dislocations.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unbelievable how much fun they seem to be having. And, you know, I guess a little fun means you're winning a little bit and you got that monster check coming in a little bit. So, you know, it's a lot of things to be happy about before Christmas this year.
Yeah, but even after Bellinger dislocated his shoulder and they had to pop it back in the next
really
night,
bright.
The next night when they went back and he hit the home run and they had the toe tap for the instead of the high fives, instead of the forearm bash, they had the toe tap and everybody was laughing. You know, I think that it's good to see that emotion from the players. And I think hopefully that will bring some of the fans back.
They said that was the third time he dislocated his shoulder with that this year. What is this kid's IQ, 25? and speaking of emotion, how about that kid with all the red hair? Wow, he could be an Justin actor if baseball doesn't work out for him, huh?
Well,
when Bellinger did that with his shoulder, I immediately went to Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon. Yeah, when he banged his shoulder against the car to put it back in place.
And as far as the hair, apparently his barber died. So find a new barber.
Hey, I've got some bubblegum cards I'm not too proud of back in the day with the fro too. So I'm not saying anything about his hair.
I never saw you like that. Brandon, what do you want?
Well, going back to Kenny Golladay for a second, the one thing that I didn't like about his message, I understand that these guys want to get paid because sometimes you're an injury away from never seeing another contract again.
Yep.
However, Kenny Golladay, he posted that after just three games this year. After missing the first two. So to me, it's like, get healthy. Yes, we know you're good, but try to be consistent throughout the year before you start popping off about how much money you want, really.
Brandon, I'm going to put you on the spot here, and I'm going to show Sorensen and McLean how out of it your generation is. This kid's red hair shock coming out of his hat reminds me of one player in the history of baseball. And his first name was Oscar, so you tell me what his second name was, what his last name was. Oscar Gamble. Have you ever heard the name in your life? You ever heard of Oscar Gamble before? No?
Yes, I have.
I mean, they just, about that.
Google him. He had some hair going.
He sure did.
He could hit, too. Man, he could hit.
Yeah, he could. So anyway, Denny is all excited because his beloved Bears have a big game coming up. But didn't you think, that was a great game Sunday. Baker Mayfield throws a 24-yard game-winning TD pass to whom? Donovan Peoples-Jones out of Detroit and the University of Michigan with 11 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Capped the drive. The Clowns beat Cincy. Steven Gutkowski is one of the greatest kickers in the history of football. He misses a 44-yarder in the final seconds that would have sent Tennessee into overtime in its big showdown with Pittsburgh. Seattle loses for the first time. Brady throws four more TDs. Tampa is now 5-2 with guess who, Denny? Your boy Antonio Brown joining the team this week.
Yes, he is. My man is coming into the NFL this year, and my man is going to set the world on fire. Get ready. I've been talking about this for a long time.
Do you know what week this is, Denny? I'll forgive you if you don't. This is Domestic Violence Awareness Week and Month. So by welcoming Antonio Brown back to the NFL, while Tom Brady is just counting on touchdowns, other people will be thinking about other things, a few other stats, like the two women who've accused Brown of sexual misconduct, one of whom alleges he raped her, the one woman who said he pushed her, causing her to fall and get scraped up. Don't forget the 8-game suspension Brown is currently serving, based in part on intimidating texts he sent to one of the women accusing him of sexual misconduct. What does it say about the NFL? I mean,
I don't know what it says about the NFL. I'm certainly not going
to
judge the NFL, but if the NFL says he can
play, let him back in,
they're going to let him back in.
You got no problems.
You know, every man's entitled to make a living. Not necessarily what you really want to do for a living, but you do have the right to earn a living. And if somebody found him and they want to take a chance with him, then have at it. I mean, everybody understands the circumstances around it. Everybody knows the ugliness of his story. And you know, what the general manager said of the team he's going to join is that we think he's matured. We're going to find that out real quick, I think.
Larry?
Well, we'll see. But, you know, heavens knows. There are skeletons in a lot of our closets, and there are a lot of people that are quick to say, you know, you should never be allowed again to do whatever it was that you did when you got yourself in trouble. And if he's paid the price, if he's gone through the proper procedures to get him back on the field, that's what you do. You don't change the rules of you don't say you did everything we told you to do, but oh, we changed our mind. We don't think it's right. We're not going to let you play.
Aren't you wondering what happened to former Rutgers star Ray Rice? Remember that, what he got into? And like, the guy's never played again. And they keep giving this guy the second chance and third chance. Now, Denny, you say you have a right to earn a living. So let me ask you two former professional athletes this question. Do you have a right to a personal life? Here come the Giants, who say they are aware of a video that shows quarterback Daniel Jones and star, now injured, running back Saquon Barkley gasp maskless and gasp, not practicing social distancing while at a bar. This video was posted on Instagram. It's since been taken down. They could face discipline from the Giants, the NFL, or both. They had dinner with some teammates and friends in a private room in a restaurant in New York City last Friday night. Afterwards, they were invited to have a drink at a bar that was closed to the public. A video of Jones gasp sharing a drink with a woman was taken at this Manhattan bar. Now, earlier in the season, the NFL fined 10 Raiders players, including quarterback Derek Carr, for breaking coronavirus protocols. I mean, I think it was kind of stupid, don't you? Because if you do catch coronavirus, I mean, just test positive for it, sure, you might miss a game. You could hurt your team. But this seems like snooping, kind of like Big Brother to me.
Well, listen, they agreed to the protocol. The players did. The owners did. The front office did for NFL. If you want to violate what you've agreed to, shame on you, and you're going to get fined in a real major league way. I suspect these guys are going to get hit pretty hard because they know different. They've had one meeting after another, and they've been told what not to do, what they can do. And the best thing is, as the one guy said from the office the one about a week and a half ago, he said, listen, after the game, go home. Just go home. It's that easy.
Well, now everybody has cell phone cameras. Think of your own careers in Major League Baseball. Oh, how many times after a game did you go out to have a drink in a bar? How would you like it if somebody had been surreptitiously filming you, taping you, taking pictures of you having a drink in a bar with somebody? I don't like this.
Well, in my case, why aren't athletes friendly to the people anymore? Well, you're the next potential disaster waiting to happen because you've got a cell phone. I don't know what your motives are with your phone. So,
yeah, in my case, all they would get was a lot of good pictures of me and Northrup, Jake Wood, Willie Horton, and Gates Brown playing poker.
And you losing money.
Me losing the dolphin, losing money again and again and again.
Because you were a fish. Did it ever dawn on those guys that dolphins are mammals?
It took me, I don't know. That I have no idea. But I can tell you it took me about a year and a half to figure out that something was wrong with the game.
All right. Sorensen's been chomping at the bit now. And I'm chomping at the bit, too. He wants to talk about his alma mater, and I want to talk about mine. But right now we have to say goodbye to our radio audience down in Toledo. So thanks so much for joining us, you guys. We appreciate you. We got a lot more on the show to come, Michigan and Michigan State. Check us out on our website to hear what we're going to say next at AskNoFilterSports.com.
NoFilterSportsPodcast.com.
God, what do I do without you? You've been listening to, in point of fact, the No Filter Sports Podcast. All right, here we go, fellas. Let's start with the positive news, and that is the positive tests for COVID of both the punter and the regular kicker for the University of Minnesota. A lot of secrecy. They didn't tell us coming into Saturday night's nationally televised game what players were going to miss the game from Minnesota, though we knew they'd be missing a few. And so Michigan had a huge advantage, a three-point favorite coming in. In the debut of Michigan quarterback Joe Milton, we all watched the game. Larry Sorensen, you're the Michigan graduate. What did you see?
Well, there were a lot of pluses. There are definitely a lot of pluses. Milton looks like he's got some moxie about him. He can beat you a couple of different ways. He's got some terrific physical abilities, no question about that. I thought that Harbaugh did a good job managing through all this. And I'm not quite sure you guys can understand how chaotic this is, trying to keep track of 120 college-age kids to make sure, because contact tracing that traces all the way through everybody they've seen during the day to get them ready, it's a mammoth, mammoth job, and everybody's doing it differently, which is part of the problem as well. So I thought that that they played a good game. Was glad to see him come away with a win against a pretty good Minnesota team. Again, you talk about not announcing who was going to be sick. There's different policies for it with different colleges. The teams that we've played with Wake Forest does not announce who's missing the game, who is not going to be playing. And it's tough because they don't even tell us announcers. I don't know if they're afraid that the opposing team's coach is going to be listening to the broadcast on his headset or what, but they don't even tell us. So we try to check and find out. The only way you can do it is by counting jerseys on the side.
They don't name the players, but do they say instead of 120 people on the side this weekend, we're only going to have 115? Do they give you any kind of explanation?
Some of the schools do. Some of the schools don't. You know, about an hour before kickoff, we had Virginia Tech this weekend. They announced these players will miss the game. They didn't say why.
Yeah, you know, Larry, this guy drives me crazy anyway. I don't know why he has this job. Mr. Purdue, Will Thiemann, longtime Michigan State broadcaster. So I happened to be listening to the Michigan State pregame show on WJR on Saturday. And Thiemann has Mel Tucker on for his big interview. They get through all everything talking about, hey, welcome, Mel, and everything. So he gets to the end of this lengthy interview, and he says, well, Mel, I think we've asked you all we should and all we can, so thanks a lot. I'm screaming at my car dashboard, who's playing quarterback today? You didn't ask him that, you idiot. So there is a lot of secrecy about this. So here's what I saw.
They don't tell you. We played North Carolina State, and when they had a different quarterback walk out to start the game, it was the first that we knew about it.
Yeah. Interesting. So, well, of course, I will never forget when Bo started Richie Hewlett against Ohio State in the final game of the year, the option quarterback out of Plymouth Salem. Here's what I didn't like, Larry, about the game Saturday night. So Michigan's up 21-10 second quarter. It looks like they're about to put the hammer down.
And they should, even though, as you say, Minnesota's they were ranked. They're, Minnesota's a good club. PJ Fleck's a great young coach, and big things will continue to be heard from him. But Michigan's defense lets Minnesota drive 75 yards in 10 plays. They score a touchdown to cut the margin. Okay, then 35-17 at halftime, the game's essentially over. But Minnesota gets the ball to start the second half. What happens? They drive 11 plays, 71 yards, and score a touchdown to make it 35-24. I didn't like that. This is not the Michigan defense that we've been used to seeing under Don Brown. I didn't like the fact that Jake Moody missed three field goals. Quinn Nordine, I guess, has a little injury. So I presume they're going to go back to him. Not that it's going to matter. Next Saturday against Michigan State. Rashad Bateman, Minnesota's All-American candidate wide receiver. 9 catches, 101 yards. The running back, Ibrahim, 140 yards rushing against the University of Michigan's defense. So I think they got plenty of work to do. And I want to say this. Larry Sorensen, I didn't see a thing Saturday night to indicate to me that Michigan is going to be good enough to beat Ohio State.
Well, fold up the tents, because we've seen 4 quarters already and we don't know that they're good enough to play them. Yeah, we can't live in the moment and say this is a crappy defense because they gave up 2 drives in 1 game to a team that was ranked in the top 25.
I'm not saying they're crappy.
Play it out. Play it out, man. Give them some time to find an identity. And I said, they're trying so hard to figure out what's going on just to get guys on the field. Wake Forest had a kid that didn't practice for 49 days because he was involved with contact tracing from this COVID virus. So there's a lot of stuff going on that people don't know about, right? And position guys and what they've been through. How much have they practiced? Have they not practiced for the last 6 days?
Brandon? Mr. Michigan, Brandon.
And don't forget that Ohio State didn't have a hot start against Nebraska. After the first quarter, I thought, oh boy, is
Nebraska. Well, they scored 52.
I understand, but we're talking, you know, if you're only talking about 4 quarters before writing off the Wolverines, you at least got to go with 1 really bad quarter with Ohio State.
I wrote off the Wolverines before Saturday even happened because they're not beating Ohio State. Danny, what do you think?
Well, if you don't like Michigan, how do you feel about Michigan State?
We're getting there. I want to say one thing about Quiddy Pay. What a tremendous game he had. What a great player this kid is. But I want to tell you this. So with the fourth quarter, it's like, you know, taking a guy out, let's call off the dog. He made 2 great plays in a row to force Minnesota to punt. You look out on the field. What? Number 19 is still out there? Why? But wait, that doesn't look like Quiddy Pay. It's Mike Sanristil, a whiteout, who wears the same number. I print out my rosters before the season starts. So I got all my rosters printed out when I watch the games. Do you know that I have 4
pages? You got to find you something to do.
Really?
Danny, I got 4 pages of roster on the University of Michigan's football team. Sorensen just said 120 players. I think they got more like 130-something. Have you ever seen a football player wearing number 0 before? Michigan's got 2 number 0s on the roster. Why do they carry so many kids?
This year they changed the rule on the 0, by the way, to make it a number that you could use in
college. Rutgers quarterback wore number 0 Saturday.
85 is the scholarship limit, and you say, why do you need that many? And Wake Forest, I'll go right back to them, had a walk-on non-scholarship player that had 3 interceptions and 11 tackles against Virginia Tech this weekend to be the National Defensive Player of the Year.
Now,
of the week.
All right, as ex-athletes, I want to ask you 2 guys this question. I mean, you want to play. You guys were pitchers. You want to pitch. You were starting pitchers. You want to pitch every 4th or 5th day, as the case may be. I don't understand why a kid would want to go to Michigan or Michigan State or anywhere and just sit on the bench, be one of 135, and never get into a game. What's that mentality about? Do you know?
Larry, go ahead.
Well, would you rather go to a small Division III
and play,
school and play?
Yeah.
Or get a Michigan education and be a part of the Michigan program when you come out after 4 or 5 years?
That's a good point.
And have that to lean back on.
Right.
And you know what? There's a lot of identity when we start talking about this. Kids want to play, obviously. If they don't get a chance to play, at least they can say, oh, yeah, I was on the Michigan football team for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that's got
some value.
It's
great on a resume.
Right. It's great on the resume. And, you know, people do that because they want to have a great looking resume eventually.
And there's a lot of kids that come out of high school saying, you know, I'm all everything in my area. I'll just go into Ann Arbor and I'll be starting there too.
Yeah,
where'd that guy and that guy come from? I didn't know they played like that in Ohio. You know,
I think the fun about baseball unless it's you guys starting pitchers, and I don't understand that either, how you pitch one game and then sit and do nothing.
But
the fun thing about baseball is you play every day.
Pitchers are very special.
That's right. The fun thing about hockey or basketball is that you play every 2 days, let's say. But football, the conditioning involved, the pain involved, and the tackling dummies getting hit at practice for one game a week on Saturday – I don't understand that mentality either, because regardless of what Sparky Anderson once said, one of the greatest quotes of all time in sports, pain don't hurt. I'm here to tell you that pain does hurt. And I don't understand these guys bashing heads just to play one game on Saturday. Larry, you were a really good football player. Denny, you were too. Weren't you guys both quarterbacks in high school?
I was a throwing halfback. I could throw, but I don't quite understand what you're trying to say. Other than people do what they want to do. I mean, that's part of the college.
I'm asking why, Denny.
You know, I don't know, Bob. I really don't know. I think that's a little beyond my pay scale.
It is the risk reward is certainly a very large gap in those in that area to just play one game at the end of the week. Practices aren't as tough as they used to be either, to be quite honest with you. Their conditioning segments are probably harder than the practices are when they're lifting and doing all the different things that they do now in addition. And the hours that they put in is just unbelievable. It is a 14, 15-hour-a-day job for those guys. And then they're forced to sleep because they have a certain amount of hours they have to sleep for the physical effect that they also measure to have your body recover. I mean, these guys talk about it in terms of if we play at 4 o'clock, we get 6 hours less rest before the next game that we're going to play. So, and yes, I was a quarterback too, only because I could throw the ball 65 yards in the air. And I ran into Lloyd Carr one time at Michigan, and we started talking football. I said, well, you know, I could throw. And he said, oh, we sent somebody to see you play and see you throw. He said, we love the way you threw, but you weren't always the first guy back in the pocket. There were some defensive tackles beating you back there.
Well, with that bit of wisdom from Mr. Sorensen, my fellow greenies, the moment you've all been waiting for, we've come to this portion of the show where we discuss what happened in East Lansing Saturday afternoon, where Michigan State somehow lost to Rutgers 38-27, a Rutgers program which should be where it belongs, the Big East, a Rutgers program that had lost 21 straight Big 14 games. I've told you guys from day one, ever since Greg Schiano got the job and went back to Rutgers, this guy is a great coach, and he is going to turn Rutgers around. But so quickly, and he did, give Rutgers credit. I'm not going to take anything away from Rutgers. Schiano was great, and they were great. But 7 Michigan State turnovers? Did you like the play calling, folks? How was that? Off tackle left, off tackle right, no matter what the circumstances dictated? Did you think that Michigan State University was ready to play? Mel Tucker's debut game? You'd think everybody would be psyched. Everybody be ready to go? Did you think they were? How did you like the talent level you saw on the field of Michigan State? You can say Mark D'Antonio left the cupboard bare, did he? But what if he'd stayed? Would have been better. And you know what I was struck with watching the game, especially if you watch both games, Michigan State and then Michigan later on that night, the size of the players. Michigan State's players, not only do they not look as big as Michigan's, but they don't look as muscular, as conditioned, like they're not hitting the weight room. And, of course, the secrecy about this, Tucker didn't tell anybody who was going to play quarterback. I'm not going to blame this on Rocky Lombardi. Fred Heumann and I talked about this in one of our recent shows. We like Rocky, great athlete, Iowa State wrestling champion, but he's not a quarterback, doesn't have a feel for the game. I thought he was okay. Jaden Reed, we heard so much about him, the big transfer from Western Michigan. He caught 11 for 128 and 2 touchdowns in his debut, though he did have that huge drop on the first play from scrimmage that led to a Rutgers score. But you're starting to see now on social media, no surprise, people are asking rhetorically, if Bill Snyder can come back to coach Kansas, how come D'Antonio can't come back to coach Michigan State after this year? You look at what happened with Mel Tucker in his 1 year. Yes, folks, 1 year head coach at Colorado. He goes 5-7. He told everybody when contacted by State he was not going to Michigan State. He lied to everybody. So he's already off on a very bad foot. The only man for the job, I said it here and everybody else did too, was Luke Fickell. Have you noticed what's going on with him? His Cincinnati team went into 16th ranked SMU Saturday, blew them to kingdom come, scored 42. The Bearcats were number 9 nationally in the polls last week, now moving up. But the longtime Ohio State assistant, veteran of recruiting in Michigan and Ohio, wanted nothing to do with this Michigan State situation.
Bob,
go ahead, Danny. Did you watch the game? You take over. You take over, Danny.
I watched a little bit, but I can tell you, Rocky Lombardi, if you want to already slam him, I think it's unfair.
You weren't listening. I said, I'm not going to lay it on
his The other thing that upsets me is what the media wrote over the weekend. He's a serviceable quarterback for the Spartans.
I don't know about that.
He had 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. That sounds
He's throwing a lot.
That's okay. That's all right. It gives him the ability to work out a little bit, learn the system, do the right things all the time, and just play football. Do what he's supposed to be doing. And you know what? I 7 turnovers. I mean, that's unforgivable. You'd wonder that whenever they started practicing, did they forget what a handoff is? They didn't practice that too. Quarterback to the running back, quarterback to the tight end, whoever, you know, that they didn't, they must not have worked on that. Right.
So it was an absolute humiliation. Denny,
it was.
Right. You saw it. Larry, you had too much taste to watch the game, being a Michigan guy beyond that, right? Did you watch the game?
I spent a lot of years with more green and white in my closet than I had maize.
Yeah, your kids?
With 2 kids going to school.
So did you watch a game or not?
I did see little bits of it, yes. I didn't see the whole thing. But turnovers, I'm huge on turnovers, and you've just got to have the discipline and the wherewithal within yourself to understand you can't give up the ball the way that they gave up the ball. I will go back to preparation and practice too, though, because it's a new system. It's all new coaches, and it's the COVID situation with how many guys do we have practicing together? How many times? There are teams, Wake Forest, for example, was a team that practiced 2 sessions. They had half the team practice at one time, half the team practice at the other time for a very long period of time until finally they meshed the units. So I don't know how they elected to do that at Michigan State. It looked like they weren't prepared. I think they've got to have a little different mindset about turnovers, because you can't give up the ball like that and expect to compete. But again, Larry, I'm not ready to bury anybody after one
game. Okay, Larry, I'm listening to what you're saying, and my rejoinder is this. Rutgers, brand new coach, brand new system, COVID issues, same thing as Michigan State.
He may have handled it much better. I didn't spend enough time paying attention to Michigan State in August and September or June and July, you know, which is what the players keep going back to. They talk about receivers and quarterbacks on the same page because they lived together on campus in June and July and through every day. Couldn't this year. Didn't have spring practice this year. You know, all those different factors, I think, have to be accounted for as well.
Let me ask you a question. At Wake Forest, when you were going through this entire thing with COVID, were there any problems with it? In other words, you had 2 separate groups. Did you have anybody test negative? Test positive.
You know, they didn't release the information.
Oh, they didn't? Not at all.
About people that, actually, I mentioned that story about the young man that missed 49 days of practice because of contact tracing. He was a multi-position player, and so he was getting into different meeting rooms, and it just happened that he kept running into the same people time after time. But it was just a really unmanageable situation that everybody's doing the best they can.
Did you guys see who did test positive? Do you know about this story? Graham Mertz has tested positive. Now, you're with me on Graham Mertz, right?
Yep.
Graham Mertz is the freshman Wisconsin quarterback who only threw 5 touchdowns Friday night against Illinois. He's tested positive. So I don't think he's going to be able to play at Nebraska this Saturday. But back to the issue at hand, we're going to get to the mailbag momentarily. One of my followers on Twitter today predicted that this coming Saturday, the final score will be Michigan 52, Michigan State 0. And I responded by asking him, what makes him think Michigan State is going to hold Michigan under 60 points at Ann Arbor? This, Larry, you're going to have fun on Saturday. This is going to be an utter disaster for Michigan State.
We've got Syracuse Saturday, so I'm going to have fun regardless. But
October 31st.
It's going to be a very good game.
You think Michigan State is going to be a good game? Why?
Yeah, of course it is.
It'll be fun to watch.
You know, it's home,
I think Michigan will win by a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be 52-0.
Well, I don't know about that. Brandon, why do you think this is a good game? Danny, why do you think this is going to be a
good game? It's a rivalry game, and you know what?
Who cares?
It'll be emotional. Man, it's the fun of college sports.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Why weren't they emotional Saturday and their opener under Mel Tucker then?
And is there anything more emotional than these two teams playing each other every year? I mean, it's a great weekend. I mean, it really is. Everybody has a good time when these two teams play.
All right. Again, I have this for you, my fellow Greenies.
You want to bet, by the way, Paige?
Yeah.
No, I don't bet football. Denny does. Denny will bet on anything, for Christ's sake. You know that. Denny. Yeah, my fellow Greenies, I have this for you. After the loss at Michigan, here's what goes on. At Iowa, Indiana at home, at Maryland, versus Northwestern, Ohio State, and Penn State. So I ask you, where is the victory there? The only thing possible, Maryland must be horrible. Northwestern just destroyed them 49-3 on Saturday, but they're playing at Maryland. That could be the clash of the Titans. Is it conceivable in this bastardized short and Big 14 season that Mel Tucker might not win a game based upon what you folks saw, as did I on Saturday? Is that possible?
Oh, God forbid.
And you say, I take this a little personally, though. I did watch it with an old friend of mine, Stan Stein, and he was screaming. He took it real personally.
I'm not basing their entire season on that first game. And when I look at it and see Indiana's going to fall out of their tree, Northwestern is beatable on any.
Indiana's good, Larry. I mean, that guy down there has done a hell of a job with that football program.
In week one. You know, look,
they've been good the last couple of years. You know that.
Let's see.
They've been better.
They've been better. They had a long way to go to catch up.
Long way.
Was it Maryland? Okay. You should win that game.
I don't know. What's that? Maryland.
I don't think the season looks that tough.
What about Iowa?
They lose, even though Iowa got beat by Purdue on Saturday. Ohio State's going to kill Michigan State 83-3 unless they call up the dogs early. I mean, this is not good. This is not good. Larry,
half full or half empty?
Yeah,
just,
have you talked,
just asking.
Yeah, your son was a hell of a pitcher at Michigan State. I don't know how that happened, but your son was a hell of a pitcher at Michigan State. Have you spoken with your son since Saturday afternoon, Larry?
I have not. We're going on vacation with him in a week.
He'll have a lot to say about this.
We'll have a bunch to say, and we'll watch some football together.
How about the mailbag, Bob?
Yeah.
What's that? I'm going to get to it. But first, Danny, I want to tell you something you already know, that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. And you know how many locations they've got, too. 5. Novine, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman has 9 locations total, including Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. And Feldman also has, as you know, Denny, Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter. That's in Waterford. It's known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. So you buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, and then you relax with Feldman's exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. And how about this for a kicker? You get guaranteed credit there as well. You can find just what you're looking for at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Their massive inventory is unmatched anywhere in Metro Detroit. And don't forget, you can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com for an effortless, hassle-free experience. And last but not least today on the show, folks, I want to tell you again about Power Home Solar. They're America's fastest-growing solar energy company, and they're based in Metro Detroit. Not only that, every one of their state-of-the-art panels is made in America. With solar energy from Power Home, you're going to save money, help save the environment, and never again suffer a costly and infuriating power outage. Partnering with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy needs. You're going to lower your energy bills. You like that? And eliminate power outages for good. And the Michigan winter is coming, and there are going to be some power outages. The Power Home also has financing starting at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90, and you'll save an additional $2,000.
Paige, you know what that Michigan engineer says about the glass half full, the glass half empty? The optimist says the glass is half full. The pessimist says the glass is half empty. The Michigan engineer says you got the wrong size glass.
And me, ever, how long have we known each other, Larry? Me, ever the realist. Tell it like it is. It's telling you the truth about Michigan State football today, folks, and that's a very painful truth. I know your kid's going to listen to this show, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say about what I had to say.
Mailbag. Right.
Denny, the mailbag. If you haven't heard our last show yet with Spencer Haywood, he was great. I mean, you really
great.
Should.
Great show.
And I want to read this. This is really interesting. It's a letter from Tom Henderson over in Windsor. He says, Bob, super show as usual. Haywood, like all your guests, was articulate and wonderful. Great Detroit story. During the interview, you guys recalled the 1968 Olympics and Haywood's role in winning basketball gold. Spencer mentioned witnessing. He was right there. Is he Tommy Smith and John Carlos' famous Black Power salute? Or as Carlos later said, a human rights salute. People forget that standing on the silver medal section of the podium was a white Australian named Peter Norman. And this is from Wikipedia that Tom Henderson sends along. After the 200-meter race was over, the two Americans told Norman what they were planning to do, and they asked him if he believed in human rights. He said he did. Then Norman made a statement that would haunt him forever. I will stand with you two Americans. Carlos expected to see fear in Peter's eyes, but he didn't. Before ascending the podium, Norman spotted an athlete with the Olympic Project for Human Rights badge, the same badge Carlos and Smith were wearing, and he too put one on. But after returning to his native Australia, he was treated as a pariah. He was vilified. He was ridiculed. He couldn't find work. Despite exceeding qualifying times for the 72 Olympics, the Australians threw him off their team, wouldn't even let him partake. John Carlos stated that if he and Tommy Smith were getting beat up, Peter was facing an entire country and he was suffering alone. Norman died in 2006. Both Smith and Carlos flew to Australia to deliver eulogies and serve as pallbearers at his funeral. And in 2012, 6 years too late after he died, the government of Australia officially apologized to Peter Norman's family. Well, this is from Joe Connor. Gentlemen, the last three shows have been outstanding. I think your ability to get popular and interesting guests on your show is the key to its appeal. Jake Wood, Manon Raymond, Spencer Haywood were all terrific. All you guys do a great job interviewing them. Keep them coming. Thank you. See Michael. Wait, don't worry, Denny. I'm getting to some stuff pertaining to you. Calm down. See Michael Raymond tweeted.
I don't need it.
See Michael Raymond tweeted that he enjoys the way we preserve the memories of so many of the sports stars who passed away. He says, just to hear you guys mention Rick Kane, Champ Summers, and Denny's boyhood hero, Bob Rush, helps keep these guys alive. Robbie Silverman, here we go, Denny. We always love listener feuds here. He says, I resent Grosse Pointe Charles taking that cheap shot at Denny on the mailbag that all the 31 game winner talks about is money and betting. GP Chuck obviously does not listen to the show all the time. Denny is quite insightful on all the issues, and I especially enjoy his spin on the Tigers. And we'll get back to Grosse Pointe Charles. Amen. See what he says about that.
There you go.
And, you know, guess who? Bet Cheryl from Rockwood is back with us. She says she likes Denny's picks, too. Got her uncle as a listener in the show, and she says, and it's easy to pick something at the beginning of the World Series, and now we're down to two games. It's a lot easier to say that the Dodgers are going to win, but you picked Tampa Bay, didn't you, Denny?
I did. I did. I picked Tampa Bay, and I'm taking my Bears tonight.
Against the Los Angeles Rams. That should be a good game.
That's going to be tough because, boy, it's tough running across the country and playing the first night or second night when you get out there. Right, Lair?
Yeah, that travel is much more difficult going coast to coast than anybody ever thinks about.
Yep.
It's always a factor.
Cry me a river. First-class travel.
Cry me
first-class hotels.
I cried
a river. How much meal money did you guys get? Well, Larry got a lot more than Denny did. First-class restaurants, first-class women, first-class everything. What's wrong with you guys? People don't care, you pampered ex-major league pitchers.
Larry, what
did try and go out and do something physical. It's tough.
Larry, what'd you get for meal money?
We were about $32 a day, I think.
Oh, okay. We were 20.
Yeah.
What's
what was the minimum when you started, Denny?
Major league salary?
Yeah.
7,000.
It was 19 when I started my first year.
My goodness. My Lord.
Hey,
I could have repaired.
Somebody mentioned something about obituaries and people that passed away. Bill Fundero passed away over the weekend.
I got that here, Larry. I was getting down to that. Yeah, go ahead. Tell us about him.
Yeah, oh, good guy. He was the guy that sat on that little orange stool behind home plate at Tiger Stadium, which was
the usher.
The usher, yeah. Bag, right?
Great guy.
And then he went to be an usher after they moved parks. But great guy, had something nice to say to you every single day.
Yeah.
You know, Ernie always said, be nice to the people in the ballpark. And it was a great way to start the day. He was right below us, you know, so you could just about have a conversation with him. And, you know, everybody asked if he ever got hit by the balls. And yes, he did a lot. And I did notice a scouting report. He was better to his left than he was to his right, especially later in years for him. And then they moved him up into the stands. But really good guy, a fixture in Detroit for a long time. A lot of people had fun at the ballpark with Bill.
Yeah, Larry, let me say this. You folks may not think you know about whom Larry is speaking, but you do. I mean, you recognize Bill if you saw him. It's just a lot of people didn't know his name. But, you know, he came to the Tigers in Denny's big season, 1968. Yep. And he only left in 2019. Of course, there are no ushers this year, no fans involved. And since you mentioned this, I also we have to say that MSU's great two sports star, Tom Husick, was the only man to win the Rose Bowl and a College World Series MVP in baseball, died at 88. And Larry, a guy that you know very well because you did a lot of work with him, Darryl Cousins, the umpire, passed away. Did you know that? October 19th at the age of Cousy was a really good guy. I don't know what you thought of him as an umpire, but you can't say he wasn't a good guy. Let's get back and remind you about the mailbag that you can tweet us at Bob Page Sports, at Larry Sorensen, at MU2Denny. Eli's not on it anymore. He'll be back on the show, by the way, on Thursday. Henry Lazarecki says he loves the show. He has to take exception, though, to one of the biggest loads of BS, he calls it, in Detroit sports history, and that's the Bobby Lane curse. He says, I'm sending you a few pages of the book that Bobby himself wrote, Always on Sunday. In his own words, Lane admitted he wasn't happy playing for the Lions anymore. But there's no curse. I hope this puts to rest the fable that the Lions couldn't win for 50 years because of Bobby Lane. They couldn't win because of inept ownership and a poor front office. And 760-89-BALLS is the number to call to either text us or leave a message. Here's one for me. The unnamed texter says, it's Big Ten here on out from now on, Bob. No more Big 13 from Rutgers. Big 13 plus Rutgers. And I got to say to the unnamed texter, you're right. Because from now on, the conference is called the Big 13 plus Michigan State when it comes to football. And, you know, hey, seriously, the old Pac-8 is called the Pac-12 with 12 members. How come what does the Big 14 get off with its tomfoolery of still calling itself the Big 10? Any ideas?
Marketing. That's what people remember. That's all about the dollars. So
I guess the Pac-12 didn't feel it needed to worry about that too much when Utah came in, and I'm not sure what part of the Pacific Coast Utah's on, but that's the way it works in college ball these days. Boys, okay, what is coming up here, Larry? Everybody is excited about Wake Forest throughout the entire state of Michigan.
Hey, we're going to make Deacon fans out of all of you, Deacon Nation.
So what's Wake Forest Deacon doing come Nation. Saturday? What's Wake Forest up to this week?
Wake Forest has got Syracuse at Syracuse.
Oh, you said that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I won't be traveling to the game. We're actually doing the game off the TV monitors at the stadium in Winston-Salem.
Well, how is
that? That'll be a new experience. It's the first time I've ever done it, no. Although, like we talked about earlier, doing the Pinstripe Bowl was kind of like it. But baseball, I do a lot of my work off of the TV because you can see pitches and everything so much better with the TV camera.
Sure.
Football is much different. And I was thinking about getting the LASIK surgery because I use binoculars during the game. And then when I want to look at my notes, I've got to quick grab up my glasses and put them on. And then I go back to the binoculars to try to see what's going on. And
boy, Larry, life's a bitch, isn't it?
it is. I mean, look, you look at my situation down here in South Florida. I got this amazing 28-year-old blonde twins living behind me, don't wear a lot of clothes around the house. So I got my binoculars out on the back porch, and every time I got to put my glasses on, you know, it's
too
not
much information.
Way Larry, too much information.
Larry, what happened at the Carrier Dome the week before last? Did you see what happened to Syracuse football? Did you see the result from the Carrier Dome? Boy, you haven't started doing your homework yet. They lost at home to Liberty, quote unquote.
Yeah, they lost to Liberty.
Wake Forest is going to win this game 83-3. 83-3, right?
83-3. I like that number, Bob. 83-3.
And Denny, what do you got going? Are you going to sign autographs again pretty soon? What do you know?
No. I'm with this surge that's going on right now. I'm hunkered down. I am at home. I am not moving.
Yeah, that's smart.
I may run out to get a little food once in a while, but nothing. I'm not going anywhere. We've managed to get through this far. It can't be much further before they have at least some kind of a medicine to help all of us.
Well, I can't tell you what a thrill it was again for Larry Sorensen to be here with his boyhood idol today.
God bless you, Larry.
And come on, Danny. You were my teenage idol as well. Yeah. Hey, thanks, guys. Really enjoyed it. Brandon, thank you very much as always. Eli comes back on Thursday. And folks, have a great week out there.
Have a good one. Stay safe.